and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we're going to talk to Jamie Mason. She's written a new thriller called Three Graves Full from Gallery Books. Gallery produces a lot of good authors, and this is her first book. I believe we're going to ask her that, but I think it is. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Hi. Yeah, it's good to talk to you. You remind me. Your voice reminds me of somebody. I have no idea who.
I know who it is. It's kind of funny. I get it all the time because our coloring is similar, too. Is it Gina Davis?
I don't know.
They do. It's funny. People used to think we look alike. I mean, we've all aged and changed. But apparently, I can't tell, but apparently I sound like her. That's what.
Well, if they start giving you movie roles, you know, go for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, don't know that I can do her job as well as she does, but I'll take the money.
She's one of those actresses that, like, had her time, and now she's kind of like, you don't hear much from her anymore.
Not a whole lot. She's probably enjoying some downtime.
She's probably reading your book.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Now, why is there an orange background and a tree on the cover? I mean, it's very effective. I like it. But what's with the tree now?
That's a fascinating little story. The original cover of the book, and you can still find it on the internet, was a white background with a silver shovel, with the words Three Graves Full in the shovel. And it's my understanding it was the Barnes & Noble wanted something more atmospheric.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted something. The book straddles sort of a literary type and a suspense type, and it's also got some dark humor in it. So the shovel cover spoke more to the suspense, and I thought the humor. They wanted to emphasize the more atmospheric quality, so they went with that, and it was a big shock to me. But I ended up absolutely loving it. So I loved both.
So Barnes & Noble likes this cover better. Okay, all right. They didn't like the shovel, huh?
Apparently not.
There's a lot of shovel digging in this book.
There's some shovel going on.
You have a very unusual writing style. Very unlike anything I've read before.
Oh, yeah?
And you're probably wondering why I say that, and you're probably afraid to ask me.
I'm a little afraid, but I'll hold on.
It's just that I have to read your sentences sometimes two or three times until I get the full meaning, because they're so rich. That, I mean, I find that they're very rich, but I don't always get the meaning in the first time I read it.
That's I don't ever mean to be obtuse. I do. I love words. I think writing in English is so much fun because we've been plundering other languages for centuries, and English is so incredibly nuanced. So I do have a lot of fun with the words, and I, like I said, I hope not to be obtuse, but I do love playing with the language is the most fun for me. I love coming up with the characters and the plot, but really that's my eating my veggies part. My dessert is.
Well, I guess my first question is, why haven't we heard from you before this?
Well, it's a slow process. In fact, when I was a little kid, people used to ask me what I wanted to be when I was a grown up. And I told them I wanted to be a writer, but I was lying. That's the funny thing.
You were lying?
I was lying. I had no intention. It never occurred to me to be a writer. The only reason I said that was because adults always went, ooh. When a little kid says they want to be a writer, ooh. And I really liked the ooh. But what I didn't realize, even way back then, I loved to read, and I was always reading, but I was also constantly narrating in my head. Really elaborate narrations with descriptions and adjectives and adverbs and all of these funny things. And I didn't realize that it didn't sound like that in everybody's head. So I had been writing for decades before it occurred to me to actually do it on paper. And I was in personal banking for years. That was my job. And apparently I wrote great memos. They would say, Jamie, you write the best memos. Love to get a memo from you. And one day I got a weird idea. For a story, and I'd never written anything, and I didn't feel like I was even allowed to. I didn't know at 31 years old you could just decide to do this. But I did, and it took me about 10 years to get good enough to where I wanted to put it out and learn about the business. I mean, there's two aspects of this, and it is a business, and it's a fascinating business. I would not count myself an expert by any means, but just understanding how the business works and also being good enough that I felt like I wanted to put anything out there. So that's why you haven't heard from me, but I'm glad that you liked it.
Well, the thing is, I get to talk to new authors all the time, and I love it. I mean, I love talking to you. People say, well, I've never heard of that person. Like, it doesn't mean they can't write well. It doesn't mean they're not a good writer. I mean, there's plenty of... I mean, Stephen King had to start from somewhere.
Well, absolutely. And one of the great things about writing is that there's no reason that you shouldn't get better. You know, it's not like in athletics or certain other disciplines, things that you can do in life that age is a negative. Age is only a positive. You know, you learn more, you appreciate nuances more. There's a lot more in your head that you can use. So there's no reason you can't start. It's kind of fun to be a debutante at anything at my age.
Well, Jason Getty's a very complex character. I mean, he's a very interesting character and complex at the same time. I found myself really liking your characters. You're very good on characters.
Thank you. Of course, in my opinion, this is not a traditional mystery or suspense story in that there's really no whodunit at all. For me, it's all about the whydunit. What happens is less important to me than why does it happen.
So you would never write a whodunit?
I don't know that I wouldn't if it occurred to me. If I thought of a good structure, I'd love to write lots of different things. But
I'm so spoiled with whodunits. That's why I had trouble with Columbo. You always knew whodunit right from the beginning, and
right.
I hated that.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, and it is a structure thing. So it hasn't occurred to me yet to write a whodunit, but this one definitely was much more of a whydunit. And so the character, it was kind of everything. You had to know him, and it was an extraordinary thing that happened to a pretty unextraordinary man in a lot of ways.
I'll never think of a gas station the same way again, you know.
Do a random act of kindness.
I'm telling you, it's like every little thing. Why is it today that every little thing in life can mean something when you used to never be like that? I mean, you look at Bill Cosby's son who tries to help somebody at the side of the road and gets killed. You know, it's...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
These horrible things that happen in life that you can't even... I mean, how could you... You're trying to help somebody. How could anybody possibly take advantage of that?
Right, right. And, the concept of a random act of kindness going very wrong.
I mean, we're not even safe in the schools today.
Oh, goodness, no, I know.
We could go on and on about that. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, the more TV play these people get, the more people want to do it. And
actually, I saw a wonderful... interview with a forensic psychologist who said that is the single biggest thing we could do to help is to not let them become headline. You can make the victims become headline news. You can talk about what happened. Do not talk about the guy who did it.
Now, you come from Oklahoma City.
Not really. I was born there, but we moved when I was an infant.
Isn't that where Carolyn Hart is, Oklahoma City?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I've never been back. We left when I was just a few weeks old.
So you probably didn't know her then.
No. I crawled to the state line. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area.
So you're from D.C. Have you ever been to the book festival? They should get you at the book festival.
I love it. In fact, I'm up here this weekend. Right now I'm in Richmond. After we lived in D.C., we did spend a few years down here in Richmond, and that's actually where I started writing. So I'm back here this weekend for a TV thing and a book signing, and then I'll be going up to the D.C. area at the weekend. So it's kind of fun to go home and do some things.
Now, is the title Three Bags... See, I knew I was going to say Three Bags. I meant to say Three Graves, and I knew I was going to say Bags because I'm thinking of that nursery rhyme, Three Bags.
Exactly.
Full. Yes, sir, Three Bags. Is that where it comes from?
Kind of, yeah. The book was originally called The Liar's Margin. And that was...
Like that title.
Yeah, it's a little bit too... Well, it's funny. Some people are still hassling me about they liked that one. But I always knew that was the working title, and I always knew that it was apt to change. That's something that you do learn about the businesses.
It sounds like a business book. Or something.
Exactly. So I was not upset that they wanted to change the name. And so Three Graves Full kind of came to me because it is... kind of darkly humorous, and that, you know, it's just riffing on the nursery rhyme, and so it just sort of came to me. We were tossing around some other ideas, and something had come up about another grave, and I said, well, that's not accurate because three graves, and then it just popped into my head, and we all thought it was good fun, so we left it there because it is kind of bleakly funny.
Right. Now, I have to ask you whether this is going to be a series, because I'm wondering, because it sounds like it could be a series.
Well, you know, and it's funny that that has come up a few times. I had not intended it to be, and at this point I don't have any inspiration for anything else for these characters to do, but I've heard a lot that people would like to hear more from the detectives and the dog, or...
Wait, who's the detective? That's the one I think I like. What's his name?
Tim Baird?
Yeah, oh no, I was thinking of the other guy, the one
Ford, the big one, the Ford Watts.
Yes, him.
And so I hadn't thought about it, but it's been brought up to me enough times that I would definitely be open to it. It's not anything that I have planned out. And for Jason and Leah, I'm not sure I could torture them any more than I already have.
No, I think I want to see Ford. Ford and his wife, that relationship fascinates me. And
I love that. Thank you so much. I really loved Maggie because Ford is incapacitated for most of the book. And the only way to get to know him is really through her.
It's to tell another story about him.
Exactly. And that's why I did that. And I'm so glad that some people have really enjoyed that because in my head, I really enjoyed them too.
Now, will your next book have four in the title?
I don't think, you know, it's funny because that's got a working title of Heritage, which I don't particularly like. So we'll see. Well, I don't like that either.
That sounds like a history book.
Oh, I'll tell you what. Titling is one of the hardest things about this whole thing. That's why marketing people and and some of the professionals in the publishing houses worth their weight in gold because they know how to do this.
But the thing with titles is I hate it when they pick a title that has nothing to do with the book.
Yeah, it's really hard. It is so hard for me anyway. Some people don't have any problem picking titles. It's hair-tearing for me. I'm absolutely teeth-gnashing, hair-tearing. What am I going to call this? Because I can write, you know, I can put the words on the paper, but then picking a few to represent the whole, that is really hard for me.
And it's interesting, when you feel the cover of this book, you can see all the roots, the tree branches, and it really is an arresting cover. They sent me this book, I had no idea I was even getting the book. I didn't even know you existed before I got this book. And that sounds really mean, but it's absolutely true.
Most people don't know I exist, it's fine.
I mean, the ultimate nightmare that you would bury a dead body and then find out it's not the only body in your yard.
I know, it's kind of horrible, but it's...
No, it isn't. It's fascinating. I think it's
funny because it is. It's one of these things where it's just amazing how wrong things can go, and that's kind of where we kept going. You know, in my head with these characters is, oh God, what else? That was a pretty fun. It was an interesting setup because I was actually writing something else, and I have a critique partner that I work with, and he lives in the UK. His name is Graham Cameron. You don't know who he is either, but you will. He's amazing.
Really?
And amazing writer. And so we swap work all the time. And so I was very frustrated with what I was working on.
Well, you meet all these, it sounds like you've met a lot of other authors.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that helps with your writing? Do you think that knowing them and talking to them has helped your writing?
If not the writing itself, definitely the experience of it. It used to be, before the advent of the internet, very, very solitary. And in a lot of ways, that's lovely. I am probably the friendliest antisocial person ever. I love being out with people, and conversely, my other favorite thing is being at home all by myself. So it's wonderful to have other people who understand, because it's kind of a goofy job in a lot of ways. You know, you spend all day with 12 words rearranging and putting in commas and taking them out and driving yourself nuts. I mean, it's really a very strange thing to do sometimes. And to have other people who understand, and also to have fresh eyes, because you know what you meant to say.
Right.
But it's not always, what you meant to say and what you put on the paper is not always, they don't always match up.
There's something about your writing that just draws me to it, because it's so different from what I've read. So it's not always clear what you're saying. Now, that may sound like I'm being harsh and critical on you, but I absolutely have to read the sentences sometimes a couple times just to get the meaning.
You know, I hear you saying that, and it makes sense to me, because I read very slowly. I am a saverer, so I probably write to the speed in my head, which is a lot slower than, I don't know what this says about my intellect, but it's probably a lot slower.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I get annoyed with myself that I can't read faster. I want to read faster.
Oh, me too, because there's so many books. My to-be-read list is ridiculous. Because I do read slowly, and I am a saver, and it bugs me because a lot of people say there are no good books coming out, to which I say rubbish. There are stacks and stacks of fascinating, fantastic books out there, and I need to clone myself. It's sad that I can't read them all.
And how did you get a blurb from Peter Straub and Tana French on the front of your book?
Oh, those were wonderful. Tana French and I, years ago, my sister-in-law gave me a book by Tana French, and I was still trying to write, figure out how to do it, and I had been in a reading slump. I hadn't been enjoying anything, and I was so electrified by In the Woods.
Mm-hmm.
And to any of your listeners, if you haven't read In the Woods by Tana French or anything by Tana French,
yeah, she's incredible. I haven't been able to get an interview with her yet. Maybe you can put a good word in for me.
Maybe I could. I sent her a note because I was so amazed by her book, and it ended up starting a correspondence. And I didn't mention being a writer for some time, and then into our correspondence, she actually asked to read it. And this was back even before I had gotten a book deal. And it was such an incredible boost because she said, okay, when this finds a publisher, and I say when, not if, she said, you know where to find me. I'll blurb the hell out of this thing. And
really?
That was amazing. I mean, that coming from her, I can't even describe.
She's
tremendous.
I hope she doesn't hear this, but when I first saw her online, I thought, oh my gosh, she looks like a witch.
Well, I've actually met her in person. She is utterly adorable. She is hilarious and sweet. And she's great. She is great. But it is funny. She has the most wonderful voice. She is...
it's an incredible voice.
Yeah, she was an actress. And I think that really plays into her writing. She's so good at embodying these characters. And so it's tremendous. And then Peter Straub is a great story because I was at a writer's conference. And I don't go to a lot of conferences, but there's one conference I go to every year in Nashville. And the one thing I had learned, that if you have any energy left at the end of the evening, you always stick your head in the bar just to see if anything interesting is going on. So I was coming back from dinner, and I stuck my head in, and there's a bunch of writers in the room, and nobody realizes that Peter Flippin Straub is sitting at the bar by himself.
Really?
I know. So I think, bunch of dummies. So I was not, I am not somebody, I would never starstalk or even pester a celebrity. What I did was I just sat down next to him, and the only thing I said, we both had our credentials on from the conference around our necks on the lanyards. All I said was, are you enjoying the conference? And he is a tremendously gregarious, funny, just very...
An unusual man.
Very unusual, and no people person, and he loves it. So we sat there for 4 hours and had a good few drinks and just an amazing discussion. And so he had said, oh, tell your publicist to send me your book. And I said, well, you know, I happen to have one. And I thought I would never hear from him again. And he sent that beautiful blurb.
That's incredible.
I cried. So, yeah, those were wonderful. That's two of the neatest things that have happened.
It's amazing he said Hitchcockian menace, because there is some, it is kind of, when I think about it, it makes perfect sense, because it does kind of have that kind of a feel to it.
And I know why. When I was a little girl, my mother had a tendency to be a night owl. She's a painter, and she would be up in the night painting. And I was a pain in the tail, and I wouldn't go to bed when I was little. So she would bribe me and say, if you go to bed, if you happen to wake up, you can watch Alfred Hitchcock in The Twilight Zone. And I always managed to pop right awake in time. So when I was little, I my first love was Rod Serling. And
wow.
So, yeah, I used to watch this. So it's not surprising, but these were some of the earliest drama and narrative things that I.
Well, I went online and I see you have almost 3,000 blog posts. I mean, you're really big into blogging.
Well, actually, it's just really for AuthorScoop. My personal blog doesn't have a whole lot on it because I don't have something fascinating.
Well, how many people read your blogs? Do you have any idea?
You know, I have no idea. I do AuthorScoop with a writer out of Austin, William Haskins, just a phenomenal poet and writer.
Hmm.
And he takes care of the nuts and bolts part, and he and I, it's just a little news portal. So I have lots and lots of blog posts through AuthorScoop, but it's basically, it's a news portal for publishing and book news and things like that. So my own personal posts, I'm not somebody... A lot of writers are told when they're starting out, oh, my God, you have to update your blog every day and write something. I would have to say absolutely not. Unless you have something that's worth saying, which I can promise I don't have something interesting to say every day, I just don't. So the author scoop is a lot of links.
Putting things online is kind of, I find it kind of, you know, I find I say things that and I look back on them and I say, well, why did I say that?
Oh, yeah.
What was I thinking that day? I mean, that's what the problem with the diary is. As fascinating as it is, you go back and look and you're like, oh my God, what was I thinking
crazy.
That day?
I know.
But it's kind of cathartic at the same time, because you realize what was going through your head that day, the worries and the that you had. And
you'll remember it. It is neat to have that sort of thing to go back, and a lot of times with specific things you've written, it'll put you right back in the moment. When I was editing Three Graves Full, though, writing a book is a lot different, because you end up reading the same things over and over again, and I would be editing, and I'd think, oh, you know what I should do? I should do such and such here. And then I would find that I've had that idea before, and it's already there, and I would completely have forgotten. It was like deja vu, because I'd read on and go, okay, I already had that idea. I already did it, obviously. Or conversely, I would read stuff and had no memory of writing it whatsoever. I would look at it and say,
It's got to be tough to read your own writing, because we're always so critical of our own stuff.
It means, and either you're too critical or not critical enough.
And being in a writing group, I mean, people get in writing, authors get in these writing groups, and I think it must be hard to sit around a group of people and have them criticize your writing, if indeed they find anything wrong with it.
Well, and they will. I mean, there's always something wrong with it.
I mean, you must go home crying and thinking, I'll never be it. Because I think we all have this idea that success is going to, it either comes or it doesn't, and you know, it's a lot of work. So it's a process of refining. You know, you just don't sit down and write a great book like that. I mean, I guess some people can do it, but
some people maybe they can. I know for me, it was very much honing. I'd like to think that I learned enough with Three Graves Full that it won't be so hair tearing. But I think I might be kidding myself. And it's a different every time. I mean, so far I had one novel that I really cut my teeth on that I didn't publish, didn't really get anywhere with. And so Three Graves Full is actually the second book I wrote, and I'm on the third one, and it's very different every time. The process has been, and I'm still an infant in this whole thing, so maybe I'll find a stride where it starts feeling more familiar. But right now, it's a new undiscovered planet every time, which is great in a way. It definitely keeps.
I'm so dying to hear more about Ford, though. I mean, you can't even promise me there'll be another book about Ford Watts.
Well, I have heard it enough that I can promise you that I will think of another story for him, because I do love Ford. I think Ford is tremendous. Actually, Tim Bayard is one of my favorite characters, but he seems to fly under the radar for everybody. For some reason, I really identified with him personally.
Yeah, Tim's cool too. Why do I like Ford even better? I don't know. I mean, as readers, you always.
Oh, absolutely.
Sometimes a character just gets to you, and you never let go of them. You never stop thinking about them.
I love that, because Ford is a great guy, and
I'd like to know how they got together and where they met, and
yeah,
that's what I'd like to know.
I will definitely take it under consideration, because.
Oh, sure, you say that now.
Because it's been really flattering, because it's not just you. People have asked, and they're kind of expecting it, because series are very popular right now. I don't know.
But it has to make sense. That's the thing. You can't just write a book and say, I'm going to make a series out of this. Because if it doesn't make sense, it'll feel contrived, and then it won't.
And it will. And then it becomes cynical that you're just cashing in on the fact that somebody liked it. It's why television series end up going seasons beyond their natural conclusion, because cynically you can still squeeze ad dollars out of it. Yeah, if I don't have a proper story to tell about Ford, I'm not going to do it. But it never occurred to me, honestly, that I would ever have a sequel to this or a prequel.
I think of Craig Johnson. I don't know if you've ever read him. He got a series based in Montana with Walt Longmire, and he's got like nine. I think the ninth one's coming out soon, and it's just a fantastic series. And you read it, and you think, well, how does he keep this going?
It's amazing.
These characters are so unusual, and it can't just be the unusual characters. There has to be a good story. There has to be, and he's already had one season of his books as a TV series, Longmire.
Oh, okay.
It's based on Longmire. You've heard of that, I'm sure.
I have heard of it. Yeah, I have heard of it.
And now they're going to put $12 million behind him for the second season. It's amazing. I mean, from just a little series of books, bam, here he gets this. But the series has to make sense. The characters have to be memorable. You have to want to know more about the characters, or who's going to read the books.
Right.
And Three Graves Full, it's full of these unusual characters. They're all very unusual characters. But what happens as a result of that gas station thing, and I don't really want to go too much into it, because I don't want to spoil it for me, but the backstory of that is absolutely riveting.
It was one of my absolute favorite things to write, and originally that story was at the end of the book. And it made perfect sense. The guy that I work with in the UK, he said, we have to be on Jason's side sooner than that. So I moved it more towards the first third of the book, and it was a great idea, and it worked really well. Because what absolutely hinged, everything hinged on the reader and me being okay with what Jason has done.
Right.
And you have to understand why he did this. And so Harris had to be despicable. And Harris was fascinating to write. He was actually so much easier to write, and I did not pre-diagnose Harris. I wrote everything, and when I was done, I ended up in a lecture with a professor from Vanderbilt University whose specialty is psychopathy. And I did, and he was describing the traits of psychopaths. And I did not realize I had really written a textbook, very competent psychopath. And so I was very pleased, because listening to this professor talk, it sounded like he was describing my guy.
Now, did you name him Harris based on Thomas Harris?
No, you know what's really funny about that is names come to me from all different places. I love looking at the phone book, and
you like a lot of different things. I'm reading on your website. You're into Formula One racing.
Yes, we're about to start.
NFL football. I
love football.
Coffee, and you like whiskey. And
yes, and phone books, yes. But Harris, I named him, and of course his name is tricky in the book. But right after I started writing this, we had neighbors move in across the street, and the guy's name is Harris. And it's actually his first name, so it was quite funny. And then I had to kill him off and do all these things and try to explain to my neighbor that, no, that didn't have anything to do.
But let's talk about three graves full. I'm going to say three bags every time now. It's driving me crazy. Three graves full. Because I think of that title. It's so, I mean, that nursery rhyme just sticks in my head. But this must have been a difficult book to write. As I'm reading it, I'm thinking she must have had it. This is a very unusual book. It had to take a long time to write.
Well, it's hard to say how long it would have taken. As it was, I wrote the first chapter on Halloween of 2006. It doesn't take me 7 years to write a book. What happened was I was also working on a different book, and I really had my energies, that was the first one I was telling you about, focused there, and what should I do with it. And so it didn't have my full attention for a long time. And then,
why is that?
Well, because I was trying to work on this other book.
Oh, okay. The other book had all your attention.
Right.
Why do writers get that way? They just try to focus on one, and then all of a sudden they become interested in another book, and it's just...
ADD helps us, but it also cripples us. Oh, shiny. Yeah, look, a squirrel. That is one of the hard things. And I had put a lot of work into that first book, and damn it, I wanted to make it work. But I haven't looked at that book in a long time, and I have to see if, because the story was great. It might be the writing that wasn't good. I'm going to look at it again after I'm done with this.
I mean, so much. You take a book nowadays. Now, why do I pick up a certain book and not another book? I don't know. I mean, you read a book, and sometimes the story's really good, but it's not really the best written book. But you could, the story drives it, and you read it, and you finish it. And then sometimes there's too much description in it.
Right. And sometimes it depends on your mood. Because right now I'm finishing up American Gods by Neil Gaiman.
Right.
And I could not, maybe 7 years ago, I tried to read that book, and I tried four times. And I knew people said it was tremendous, and I just wasn't in the mood. I started it four times, put it down, and now I can't imagine that's where my head was, because it's fantastic, and I love it, and I'm just...
Well, sometimes, and I find a lot of books are difficult to get into. I don't know why that... Yours hit me pretty hard in the beginning. I mean, it was very easy to get into in the beginning, so yours was different, but a lot of books I read, and I get 10 pages, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can read this book. It's just...
Well, I do think it's also a product of our snippet email... Twitter culture. Right now, our brains are tuned to a much shorter frequency, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just different, and so sometimes it is a matter of retooling inertia to be able to sit there and invest in this long story. And so it's interesting to know that the short story is making a comeback now. It used to be real popular in the 50s and 60s. And just sort of fell out of favor, but it's actually coming back into fashion because that's really the way we work now, is quick little bites. Look at
John Grisham's Ford County book, which was wonderful. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. It. John Grisham's books to me are not always great, and then I hope he's not listening. But Because he's from Virginia, too, I think.
I think so. I think if he's not from Virginia, I think he does live in Virginia.
Somewhere down south. I don't know where exactly.
Yeah.
So I'll probably get an email saying, oh, you idiot, you don't know where John Grisham is from?
You can't keep track of everybody?
I don't keep track of John Grisham. A friend of mine said she was at a baseball game, and he was there, and I said, you didn't go over and say hello to him?
And I've actually heard he's really nice. I was just talking to somebody recently who was there, wherever it is he lives, and apparently he's been they were at a diner, and they ended up sitting down and having coffee and talking books for a while. I can't remember.
And they talked to John Grisham?
Oh, gosh, yeah. He's the nicest guy is what I've heard. He's a great guy.
Really?
I have to say that the writers I have met, to a one, I don't. There's this perception that they're either socially inept or unfriendly or backstabbing. Maybe I'm a naif. I don't know. I've not found that to be true. I'm generous, clever, funny.
Well, now I'm going to have to go over. I have to see if I can get an interview with John Grisham.
I've heard he's delightful. Just the nicest guy ever. So I've had wonderful experiences meeting the few people that I've gotten to meet.
I think you have to be. I mean, as an interviewer, I have to sell myself. I have to convince people to let me interview authors, and it's not easy sometimes.
Well, it's also a time thing probably. And now I do know that. Also, I actually got to meet Lee Childs. Wow, what a nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
Nice guy. But I guess, and what I heard was, because I remember asking him and talking about just this thing about how friendly and nice authors are, and he said, you know, the ones you meet will be like this. The ones who are not tend not to inflict themselves on the public, and they just never leave
right.
the house. And so it's one or the other.
Like Dean Koontz, yeah.
Yeah, very, very reclusive. And so, yeah, so the ones you meet.
Well, wouldn't you love to get in Dean Koontz's head, though?
Just for a few minutes, and I'd want out.
I don't know.
he's wonderful.
He's not as bad as people think he is. People have this idea that he's...
I've read lots of Dean Koontz. I think he's tremendous.
But, I mean, he's just a good storyteller.
But
there's paranoia all over his books.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
In a huge way.
And a lot of terrible things happen, but I do think that one of the reasons that it's one of the largest genres, horror and suspense, is that luckily for us, mostly we'll never test the limits of our capacity for reaction. Not enough bad stuff will happen, thank God, in your lifetime that you actually physically have to react to. And I think it's a type of exercise. We keep our emotional muscles conditioned by reacting to simulations of things that happen in real life.
Now, would you classify Three Graceful as more of a thriller or suspense? I think it's more of a suspense.
I would say suspense, definitely. Those words are shelves in a library or bookstore, and it's kind of tricky to figure out. I was asking somebody, what's the difference between suspense and thriller? And you'll get, ask eight people, you'll get eight definitions, but what I sort of came to realize is that a thriller, there's usually something global at stake or very, very big. Suspense has a tendency to be more private disasters, smaller scale, dust-ups. And so I would definitely say this was more of a suspense than a thriller, but both words end up getting thrown around and mashed together. But if I was going to pick, I would definitely say suspense.
And we've all had this experience, and your book asked the question in my mind, what would it be like if somebody became obsessed with me? Somebody I really didn't want, somebody who I thought was nice and wasn't, and what would that be like? I mean, we all have that fear that
sure.
you ever start a conversation with somebody, you start to realize this person is really all there. There's something wrong with this person.
Yeah.
And then you find that they keep talking to you, and before you know it, you can't get away from them, and you don't want to be rude. Nobody wants to be rude. But
right, but trying to extricate yourself can be an exercise in diplomacy.
And that's what Harris is like. And you know, we what would it be like to go through something like this? Like, you just feel for Jason.
I really did. I really did, and I know he's not real, and I don't bleed when he bleeds, because it's a story.
But it's interesting how you feel, from the beginning of the book to the end of the book, how you feel about Jason. And whoever hasn't read this book, I suggest you read it and tell me how you feel about Jason at the beginning and the middle and the end, because I found myself feeling different things for him during the course of the book.
Oh, sure.
And
he's frustrating at times.
He's a very complex character. He's not a simple character.
I mean, no.
Some people, I used to work with a guy who was very unusual, and he was always the same way. I mean, you could always, no matter what you said to him, it didn't seem to offend him in the slightest, and you know, he would just dismiss what you said. Even though you know there's more to a person, sometimes people seem very simple, but they're not always that simple.
I think most people probably aren't, and that was one of the things that I had in mind when I was writing Jason, was that part of the story is that even people that might, you know, from our outside view seem bland or simple, nobody really is. Nobody of average intellect and psychological makeup.
So doesn't that bother you that I'm more interested in Jason than I am in Tim?
No, not at all. Not at all. No, 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 not at all. If anything in the book was interesting to you, I am utterly thrilled.
I guess the writers want us to focus on one person over another. But
the focus is definitely on Jason, absolutely. I mean, he is the main character, no mistake. And, Tim is a little side project in my head where he did end up, more of my personal personality, I think, came through in him, and I don't know why. It was kind of interesting. It doesn't matter at all. It's just a matter of interest.
And the idea of characters, Lisa Scott-Lini wrote a book called Everywhere That Mary Went. It was her first book. Mm-hmm. And she wrote this gay character in the book. And the gay character takes over the book, completely takes over the book.
Uh-huh.
But the gay character doesn't survive the book.
Oh, yeah.
And I have
never seen these in, huh?
I have not forgiven her. To this day, I have not forgiven her. And I remind her constantly, you've got to create another character like that character. That is a great character.
Isn't that neat? I love ones that stick with you. There was a...
I may actually use that character in this.
Why not?
Just change the character name and just... I mean, because it's just fascinating. There's something about a certain character in a book. I mean, Hannibal Lecter. I mean, the list goes on and on. Characters are interesting, even though they do sick things and...
Oh, well, yeah, the Tana French was really funny because she liked my two bad guys the best of all. Those were the ones that stuck with her, Harrison Boyd. Those were the ones that stuck with her. And so everybody gets pulled in different ways.
But, you know, here's the thing, and I don't know how you're going to take this, but
okay.
Boyd and Bart, you know, I was getting confused because of the B's. I think you shouldn't use the same first letter.
Oh, Bart and Boyd. Well, twins often get named with the same.
Is that true? Yeah. I was finding I was getting confused with the two. I don't know why. Maybe it's just me.
I have found in my life, and we have a lot of twins in our family, that they have a tendency to give the kids, not always, of course, but my mother, Jean and Joanne, her sister, you get lots of twins with alliteration. So that's why I did that. But I'm sorry you got confused.
Yeah, I don't know. Every time that happens, it seems to happen to me. I'll get confused. Oh, is that character or this character?
Sure.
It's probably just me, but...
I don't think it's just you. No, no, no.
Everybody's going to run out and buy the book now to see but I want everybody to experience this book. It's just a fascinating book.
Thank you so much.
You know, I never know what to say to authors. I'm always afraid I'm gonna somehow insult them without.
Don't worry about that with me.
Without meaning to, but, you know.
The fact that you want to talk about it is more than I could ask. So, absolutely, whatever occurs to you to say, I'm fine with it because you've been generous with your reading time and generous to want to talk about it, and so you've got a mile margin in my book.
Right. It's funny. There's an app on the back of the book too. What happens when you get on that app? It tells you about the book?
I think it goes to my Simon & Schuster page. That is something that they're doing on books all the time. And I don't actually have a smartphone, so it doesn't do anything if I point my phone at it. I believe if you point your phone at it, it takes you to the Simon & Schuster author page for my one book. I think that's where that goes.
I see there. Did you read? You ever read the book Serena?
I did.
Did you like it?
Yes, I did. I love Ron Rash's writing is tremendous. Now, I did. The story was a quiet story in a lot of ways, but Ron Rash could retype the phone book for me, and I would be amazed. So I think he's.
Why is it we like certain authors? I mean, why is it? I mean, you probably there's.
I know my reason. My reason is because I like the sound of their words in my head. It always comes down to the writing for me.
But to me, it's the story and the characters, whether they resonate with me, whether I remember them.
That's the second group for me. But it's always words first, story second, and it's not that way for everyone.
Well, what do you think of James Lee Burke?
I've never read James Lee Burke. I know the name, obviously. Absolutely.
Right. Well, a lot of people love his writing, and yet I've read him, and I don't know, I just can't get into the books.
Now, well, when I think of great writers, I mean, it's so across the, I mean, across the spectrum.
Just because I don't like him doesn't mean he's not a good writer.
Well, and no, and that's why they make all flavors. I mean, you know, Cormac McCarthy works wonderfully for some people, and some people find it unreadable.
Well, his tend to be very depressing from what I've heard.
Well, yeah, then there's that. But I like to drink anyway, so it's okay.
But depressing's not always bad. I mean, there are books that are very depressing,
Absolutely.
And yet...
Oh, it's wonderful. Because, like I said, it's emotional exercise. It puts you there. So, yeah, there is a delicate balance between words and story. Words always, for me, trump story, but that's not always the case.
Why do you think people will like Three Graves Full?
Well, I hope...
What's the hope? What do you expect people to like? I mean, I to me, it's the characters that resonate. The story is interesting, and the characters are very fascinating and memorable. And that's
wonderful. I hope they enjoy the setup, because it is kind of a horribly funny. It's kind of like banging your elbow.
And plus, you have to know what are these three graves? What is this about? Yeah. You know, why are there three graves? You know?
Yeah, I hope that, you know, it's a little bit unusual in the very traditional suspense sort of thing, like a James Patterson or things like that. It's not like that. It does straddle a literary line, because it's a lot about why. It's a lot about the words. But it is. I hope readers would enjoy the setup. Because,
well, how do you pick what you read? I mean, you walk into a bookstore. What makes you draw to one book over another? Is it the name of the book?
Not usually the name. There's a couple of different ways. I love getting recommendations from people who I respect, but I also love. You're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but my God, the artists. I will give first attention to a book that I find has an interesting cover. Then I read the flap. Then I read a few, you know, few first pages. That's the way I normally do it. But if I'm just striking out on my own, I love recommendations, weird stuff. And I'm finally getting mature enough. I used to make myself finish every book I started, even if it wasn't working for me. And now I realize that that's not necessary.
Yeah.
So,
But you're looking at your book. Your book just draws us in from the cover. I mean, the title and the cover just draw you in.
It's beautiful. They really did a wonderful job. I was very excited. I was very lucky. Every single person at Gallery Books, I should say professional first, but even before that, they've been tremendously professional, but they have been a joy.
Are they going to send you to, what's that conference they do in July, the ITW, is it?
The BEA?
No, the one, the Thrillers, the one Lee Child goes to every year.
Well, he goes to BoucherCon. That's where I met him. I might go to BoucherCon.
No,
I don't know.
This is that International Thriller Writers Conference.
You know, like I said, I don't go to many conferences. I am going to go. I probably will go to BoucherCon this year. I always go to Killer Nashville every year. I'd like to go to more. Oh, I am going to High Country Festival of the Book. That's near where
it's hard to get them mixed up. To get them mixed up, because there's so many of them.
There's a lot. And some of them are more for writers, and some of them are more for fans. Like BoucherCon is actually more of a fan track, people who read suspense and thrillers and mysteries.
Well, are they going to do an audio of your book? I'd love to hear it as an audio.
Actually, yeah, it just came out. I haven't gotten my copies yet. I can't wait to hear it. The guy who read, I could look it up, John Pruden is his name, I believe. He read the Sisters Brothers last year that got Best Audiobook of the Year from the Washington Post.
What's the book called?
The one he did last year was called The Sisters Brothers. I've
heard of it.
I haven't read it yet. It's on my to-be read list. It's supposed to be amazing.
How do these books pass me and I don't even know they exist?
It's like a tidal wave.
You wonder how all these books get published. I mean, what is it about? I mean, your book is so distinctive. I have no doubt that it would get published. Just reading it, you know it would. There's just something about it.
Well, I can't wait to hear the audio. It's out from Dreamscape Audio. You can find it on Amazon. You can buy it directly from Dreamscape. If you Google it, it's on there. I need to get a link to that audio. It just came out February 26th. I need to get that on my website, because I haven't heard it yet. I'm dying to hear it. And there's also going to be a UK audio version a little later, maybe.
That's
later
great.
In this year, beginning of next year. So now, that'll be funny.
Will we see another book by you, do you think?
I hope soon. My problem is I'm going through a life transition right now. We are moving and building. We're living in transitional housing, so it been very, very hard to write. I do have something in the works, and I hope that Gallery likes it, and I hope we move forward. So I can't give any specifics because I haven't finished the book yet, but I hope it goes well. So I would hope in the shortest amount of time, and in publishing terms, that's pretty glacial paced. So I guess we'll see. Because I would love to play in the sandbox again. I have had so fun is not the right word. This has been a dream come true and incredibly.
But at the same time, it's got to be difficult to write.
It
I mean, how
hard.
Do I know exactly what to say
it's
and
what
work? I mean, I don't want to repeat myself too much, and I don't want to.
There's that. What you have to do, you have to know where the story's going, and then you have to pick a scene to depict what the reader needs to know next, and then of course you have to pick the words to write the scene. So there's tiers of things, and one of the hardest parts is when you write something and then you realize that didn't work, and you have to pitch out the whole lot of it. That's kind of hard, but you know what? Even a bad day writing is a pretty damn good day.
Well, I hope we can get this interview on your site. That'd be great. I'd love to.
That'd be great. That'd be great. Thank you so much.
I'll get Stephanie involved with this. I'll write to her. She's pretty quick in answering. So
she's
good.
Wonderful. Everybody at Gallery is amazing, and I am so thankful that they connected with you. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it was me. I think I had asked, and they just said, sure. You know, with publicists, you never know, because they're always so busy doing, they've got so many things running through their mind.
They're amazing. I don't know how they do it.
I mean, they can't just stick with one author. They've got to have five or six.
Probably at least, yeah. I mean the amount of books that are being churned out is tremendous, and they're absolute professionals. They know what they're doing, and I would never know where to begin.
You're so well spoken. I mean, it's amazing talking to you. How you're not nervous at all.
And well, I tell you, I started talking really early, and I only shut up to go to sleep, so that's pretty easy.
But it's just been wonderful. I've enjoyed it so much. I can't wait to talk about the next book.
Well, fantastic! Thank you so much. And if I get any news on that front, because I really have to get working on it, and because I so desperately would love to do the whole process again. As hard as it is, it's...
And I can't wait for that Ford Watts book.
Okay, I'm going to think about it. It was funny because there was a reviewer who was really intent on me writing Harris's backstory, and nobody had ever said that before, and I was like, oh, God, I never even thought of that.
Yeah.
But it's neat to have some established characters, and there has been more talk about Tim and Ford having more story.
They could have their own series, at least one or two books, you know, and not necessarily 25. But you know.
No, absolutely. No, I, it'd be hard to imagine. But yeah, if I can think of something more for them to do, because I like their little town. What's so funny is Stillwater is nowhere in particular, and it's been really funny because several reviewers have assigned it to Oklahoma or Michigan, and I specifically did not, even my editor asked me, well, where is it? And I said, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? And I said, I specifically never went there in my head because it doesn't matter where it is. I mean, obviously it's not a beach town,
right.
And it doesn't read like it's the desert. But beyond that, Washington State, Florida Everglades, I don't know.
I picture it being down south somewhere. I don't know why.
I think it has. I mean, I've always lived in the south, so I think that it's probably flavored with that for sure. But it has been funny to see that people have, just as I had hoped, sort of put it someplace that was familiar to them. And because I kind of wanted it to have as much as possible and everywhere feel, so that was good fun too.
That's great. Well, it's been great. We could go on forever. The book again is called Three Graves Full by Jamie Mason. I almost said bags again. I can't get that out of my head now.
See? Thank you so much.
And it's from Gallery Books. It's in all your bookstores now, and ebooks and audio. So go and enjoy it. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.